Good evening, listeners. You are listening to Community Radio Yule 104 FM. I'm Gertrude Cotter, and this is The Global Hub, the programme that deals with social justice and human rights issues at home and abroad. Just last month, on the week of the 14th of October 2019, nation states from around the world gathered to negotiate a new agreement to plug the gaps in international law which would hold companies to account for human rights violations. This was the fifth session of the open-ended Intergovernmental Working Group on Transnational Corporations and Other Business Enterprises with respect to human rights. Many countries, although by no means all, were there to elaborate this international legally binding instrument to regulate in international human rights law the activities of transnational corporations and other business enterprises. The voices of Irish people who were concerned or who are concerned about human rights and the corporate abuse of power were heard loud and clear at the United Nations in Geneva that week. A group of people left Dublin Port in the early morning of the 10th of October and travelled by boat, train and bus to arrive in Geneva for the week. The group were staff and volunteers with TROCRA, the Irish International Development Organisation, and they were one group amongst many from civil society around the world who convened in Geneva to play their role in combating human rights abuses. I was lucky enough to be with this group for 4 days in Geneva, and I am grateful to TROCRA for this incredible learning experience. Tonight we're going to follow the story of TROCRA's important human rights work in this field and the story of the incredible TROCRA staff and volunteers who worked tirelessly throughout the week to add their voices and try to influence aspects of the treaty which matter to TROCRA partner communities around the world.
So I'm Siobhan Curran and I'm the Policy and Advocacy Advisor on Human Rights with TROCRA. So this treaty is a treaty to regulate the activities of transnational corporations and other business enterprises. And the reason this treaty is so important and the reason that civil society throughout the world are advocating for it is because it's needed to address a recognised global governance gap. So we know there's a gap in international law in the regulation of transnational companies particularly. It's very hard to hold head companies to account for the activities of their subsidiaries, and there's jurisdictional barriers to holding companies legally accountable for the harm they cause. This is a huge problem because it means that people who are affected, communities and human rights defenders don't have a recourse to justice. And when you don't have somewhere to go to make your claim, to get reparations, well then impunity just continues and continues. A very recent example that demonstrates exactly why we need this treaty is the case of Brumadinho. And this is in Brazil, where a tailings dam collapsed, killing hundreds of people, destroying the environment. And it was one of the companies involved in this was Vale. And what's really shocking, apart from the loss of life and the devastation that this caused, was that it wasn't the first time. And this is the second time that Vale have been involved in a collapse of a dam with the killing of people. And they were not held to account the first time, and then it happened again. This is exactly why we need a treaty. These are the types of companies that need to be regulated. When you abuse human rights, when you benefit and profit from human rights abuses, you have to be held to account. And this is what this treaty is trying to address.
Early on Saturday morning, I met up with the TROCRA volunteers at their hostel, who were making banners in preparation for a demonstration in town in the afternoon. It is worth reflecting on the commitment and hard work of activists. This group of people, whom we will hear from later on in the show, had, with the environment in mind, just spent 2 days travelling by boat and train. And here they were now, early on a Saturday morning, thinking seriously about the slogans they would use for banners later that afternoon. I think it is important to recognise this kind of often unseen dedication by people who really care about human rights.
Like once I was thinking maybe it's something to make it your business. No, I suppose human rights before business rights is what we're talking about as well, isn't the same thing, yeah?
And the defenders.
Yeah, that's great.
And it's familiar.
Good one, yeah.
Maybe one in Irish.
What did you say there?
Capitalon
equals Catadena.
What does that mean?
It's
nice and neat.
It represents Ireland too because it's our language.
Yeah, you could have something like Irish supporting the treaty or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Irish people supporting the treaty.
You know?
Irish people for the treaty and it's for the
for. Yeah, for the treaty. Yeah. Irish people for the
treaty. For a binding treaty, maybe?
Later that day, on the Saturday afternoon, I met up with the volunteers at the demonstration downtown.
Thomas, where are you, man? Madame, bonjour.
Bonjour.
So, what's your name and where are you from?
My name is Gronia and I'm from Temple Oge in Dublin.
Yeah, you're representing?
Trocra.
Yeah. And why are you here personally? Why did you make a decision to come here yourself?
Because I think that the only power that can succeed as against a corporation is a united sector of the public, and otherwise they'll persevere to take the land and, you know, breach the rights and kick the people that are deserving off the land. So if we don't come in numbers, we won't succeed.
Okay, thank you very much. And yourself?
Tony Devlin from Dublin.
And you're with Trocra as well?
That's correct. Yeah. Well, I think it's part of an overall involvement with Trocra and their campaigns. And this one is so important, business and human rights. And trying to motivate, in a way, Ireland to take the lead, our own representatives here at the working group that's starting on Monday, and really just to make sure our voice is heard.
Thank you. And you are?
My name is Joe Murphy and I'm from Galway, and I am here to support the Trocra campaign and the international campaign to get a binding treaty on business and human rights, because I think it's terrible what's happening in the developing world, of where many indigenous people are losing their land to mines and to large transnational companies. And I hope that the binding treaty will come into force very soon.
Bertie O'Hain did a sanamdum. As Trocra.
Cain fall, a will to unshaw.
Well, tá mbeann seo mar gheall ar an bealach atá gnólachtaí móra ag caitheamh le daoine dúchasacha sa tríú domhnas go háilithe America Theas agus a Guatemala. Tá siad a tíochta seach ar bhaithe le brabach móra dhéana, agus tá siad a caimeach na daoine seo ar an talamh, dí shealbh iomlán, tá siad dóna tithe agus gan trúan na Trocra, as is mór an náire é, agus tá buid anseo é tacú le chunra ag an náisiúnta a thuirech tacaíocht agus a hóireach stádas tríthúil don na daoine seo, agus béidir a hóireach cúteach ób amachan seo nuair a dhéantar an DIY orb.
My name is Teresa. I'm from Belfast in Northern Ireland. I'm here representing Trocra. Obviously, human rights are at the very basis of just kind of humanity. Without human rights, then, you know, society can't actually function. And so I'm very much in favour of a binding treaty, making sure that people's human rights are protected around the world, and at this march specifically, because it's actually great to kind of get your voice heard in public, get people kind of learning about what's happening, and just kind of get some visibility for what's going to be happening in the week to come in the UN.
Are you impressed by the different countries that are here?
I'm very impressed, and I'm loving the colours. Like, just there's so many like vibrant colours, there's so many places represented, and like, actually, you know, even kind of having spoken to a couple of people, there's so many like personal stories represented. You know, there's one of the girls from Brazil who her village was massively affected by a dam bursting, and, you know, things like that there, and you're just kind of like, these are people who are actually experiencing what it's like for when businesses don't adhere to their human rights and that human rights are put at the bottom of the list.
I'm from France, and I am in the organization CCFD Terre Solidaire. There is some people of the national committee that, who participate on Monday to the discussions, okay, about that law about the multinational and the right of people to take the power of their rights, their health, their economy, okay? Because the multinational take money and they deny the rights of people and the protection of environment. For her, for the multinational, making money is better than protecting the rights of people and protecting the environment. So that's foolish. Merci beaucoup.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Naël et je viens de France. Bonjour, je m'appelle Naomi.
Et je viens de France.
Across the world, communities are being forced off their land, having their forests cut down, and their rivers poisoned in the pursuit for profit. In western Honduras, the community of Azacualpa are at the forefront of this global rush for natural resources. Here, the country's largest open-cast mine, the San Andreas Gold Mine, is operated by a Canadian company, Aura Minerals. On a hill lies the community's 200-year-old cemetery. The company has begun to dig up bodies to get to the gold underneath.
Bertie O'Henver is my name. I live in Drouan in Connemara in Galway.
Okay, and just a little bit on your own background there, first Bertie. You have a diplomatic background, so this is familiar territory to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, years ago, over 17 years in fact, I worked in the Department of Foreign Affairs. And for some of that, I served here in Geneva with the permanent mission of Ireland to the United Nations. And I saw conferences like this and how they work. And subsequently, I was private secretary to a minister dealing with overseas aid. And I would have witnessed tragedies and famine in places like Somalia and Sudan and in other places throughout the world. So I'd have an idea of the background to this type of suffering. Subsequently, I moved to Connemara and went into a different world dealing with the Irish language, the islands and rural development. So that's my background.
So I suppose I can see from that background that's probably your experience of being on the ground in places like Somalia and Sudan is probably why you decided to volunteer with Trocar, I presume?
Well, yes, I had seen Trocar in some of these countries, and working on the Irish Aid Programme, I saw the effect of sustainable development, whereby the Irish government would make a plan for one of the third world countries that had target countries, and it would be an integrated plan which dealt with perhaps education, health, infrastructure, farming, and other aspects of life, and training the locals and upskilling them by bringing them to Ireland, and the difference that could make long term in a place, for example, in Tanzania or maybe in Sudan. And that affected me a lot, and I saw some of the good work Trocar were doing, particularly the way they could tie in with partners in the third world, and these partners are on the ground in touch with local communities, understand local communities, and that meant for Trocar that they were able to get good value for the money that's donated to them in Ireland. And I was always impressed by them, and I always promised myself that I'd go back and that I'd volunteer for Trocar sometime in the future. Now I'm retired, and this was my first opportunity to opt to volunteer, and I'm enjoying every minute of it, I have to say.
In terms of the kind of processes around what we're doing here, you've obviously have years of experience. Could you tell us a little bit about how these things work? Because as an outside observer, it seems highly complicated. There's countries from all over the world. There's NGOs from all over the world. There's business representatives. It's been going on for a number of years. And sometimes you think, is there ever going to be any coming together and resolution of this?
Well, I suppose you have a two-pronged approach here in a way. You have non-governmental organisations, or as they were referred to now, civil society, and you have businesses on the one hand, and then you have the governments on the other hand. And the particularly the non-government organisations, they are making contact, they are explaining their situation on the ground. They are the people that are suffering at the moment, particularly with regard to land rights. And then the governments are the ones that are taking their instructions from their capitals and that are delivering here on the ground and reporting back as the process continues. Now, you have to remember, this started with the resolution of the Human Rights Commission in 2014. So we're already 5 years down the road, and really we're still only at the very beginning. The draft is there. There's a lot of disagreement. There are some countries that aren't even participating. There are some that are there but they're not negotiating. And then there are quite a number of countries that are already discussing the draft text. So this is going to take a while. And what will happen, if I understand it, this is a working group. They'll work on the text. This is the fourth or fifth session. They'll have other sessions. That'll take a few years without a doubt. They'll reach a situation where more countries, hopefully, more countries become involved. We get more of a consensus. A text is agreed. And we have a draft treaty. Now, that draft treaty has to go to capitals, and it has to be ratified. And to get a treaty ratified in instances like that by a majority of countries could take a considerable amount of time. So there's a lot of work involved. It could be 5 to 10 years before we see the real effects of this. But in my opinion, once that work is done, once it's done solidly, step by step, carefully, everyone brought on board, well, then you could have a treaty that would stand its ground for a long, long time. And some of the UN conventions that were agreed 40 and 50 years ago, like the Vienna Convention on Consular Affairs, they are still very much on the ground. They are being implemented and will be for some time. The same with refugees. So it's a long, drawn-out process. It can be tedious. It's hard work. There are a lot of countries at the moment reluctant, big businesses, etc. But I would be hopeful, and I'd have to be optimistic and say one day, maybe in 10 years' time, maybe less hopefully, we will see a good result to this, and the suffering of these indigenous people in places like Ecuador and Guatemala and Honduras will come to an end.
On Sunday, we made our way to a day-long planning event with the Treaty Alliance Group of civil society organisations from around the globe. The depth of feeling in the room was palpable. Many people here had been working on aspects of the binding treaty for a very, very long time. Groups and organisations had submissions for the treaty negotiations, which they would give later on that week. While not everyone agreed on everything, the central human rights message was at the centre, as groups work strategically together to make the best impact possible. I met up with Donald Hernandez, the director of a TROCRA partner organisation working in Honduras. Here you will hear mostly the voices of Gloria and Emily, who helped with the interpretation.
In Honduras, we have 302 mining licenses, mostly in area where water is lacking, and therefore there's a great struggle around water, the quantity of water that is needed for the mining industry and that is needed for the communities. We also have a precedent in Honduras where companies who were mining have not only displaced communities, but they also very much contaminated the environment.
Y en el tema de las hidroeléctricas tenemos más de 150 proyectos.
We have over 150 hydroelectric projects that are approved in Honduras. Most of them are taking place in indigenous territories where communities have been displaced and are suffering greatly due to the land grabbing.
Tenemos la Gold Corp.
We have several companies, most of them are from Canada, mining companies. One is Gold Corp and another one also with a Canadian capital called Five Star Mining. Most of the mining companies in our territories come from Canadian investments. Well, what the Irish government can do is to keep leading actions to protect human rights and to be an example for other European countries for whom we know that human rights are not a priority, especially when acting in our territories.
Trocaire nos apoya.
Trocar supports us in accessing information. In Honduras, communities and organizations do not have access to information. The Honduran government has refused to sign the ESCAS agreement that guarantees the right to information. So Trocares help us create open spaces for information in order to retrieve information and then to create spaces for consultation for projects that occur on indigenous territories in particular. We hope that the binding treaty will force our states to meet its obligation, particularly to respect human rights such as the right to information, as well as to force corporations in implementing human rights in all of their actions.
Donald, thank you very much for being with us. I really appreciate that. And thank you to our two interpreters, Maria and Emily. Thank you very much indeed.
The dangers faced by human rights defenders who oppose private companies in Guatemala are significant. Of course, they aren't unique to Guatemala. It is a global problem that needs a global solution.
Across the world, the rights of some of the most marginalized communities are being threatened and undermined by some of the world's most powerful actors. And these are transnational corporations and other business enterprises. And the impact of their actions are causing environmental degradation, pollution, flooding, displacement of whole communities. And they're doing this because there's an accountability gap. This is particularly in the context of large transnational corporations who often have very complex legal structures. And so what's happening in countries where rights are being violated? The state is either unable or unwilling to hold these companies to account. And in the countries where their headquarters are based or where they operate out of, they're also not being held to account by those member states. A lot of the largest companies in the world wield huge economic power, and states are often colluding with them in order to attract investment. But they're doing this at the expense of human rights. This is why a UN binding treaty on business and human rights would be so powerful. It's a mechanism to hold corporations to account.
The creation of a global treaty on business and human rights would be an important step towards holding private companies that violate human rights responsible for their actions. Simply put, it would be a legally binding international agreement to help protect communities from abuse related to business enterprise and to help victims access justice and reparations more readily. A strong treaty would also provide specific protection for human rights defenders who challenge private companies and open up new avenues, both legal and non-legal, for ensuring corporate accountability. The process to create such a treaty is underway in the United Nations. Member states and other stakeholders, including business groups, NGOs, and human rights activists, are involved in consultations towards the development of a treaty. However, there is no guarantee that a treaty will be achieved. Many countries whose companies are among the worst offenders are challenging the process. If a strong treaty is to be created, it is essential that the needs of vulnerable communities and not those of private companies are prioritized. This isn't about being anti-business. It's about responsible business. This isn't anti-profit. It's about ensuring that the hunt for profit does not violate human rights.
Well, international advocacy is crucial on this theme, not only to protect the life of human rights defenders at risk, but also to protect their work, but also the environment in those countries and the natural resources. So some of those companies come to a country like Guatemala to do things that they are not even allowed in their own countries, yeah? Because there are no rules and regulations. I mean, they might claim it's up to the state to regulate that and to punish if a company, but there should be certain standards. And that's why we think a binding treaty on business and human rights would make a difference to the human rights defenders, but also to the communities.
Various countries object to some of the conditions that are laid out in this treaty for various reasons. For example, some of the third world countries that are here and whose populations may well be suffering because of the activities of these international companies, they are bound because the companies are so powerful and because the companies bring a lot of money into their countries and they want to keep them there. Then you'll have some of the developed countries and they have huge international corporations, and these are very wealthy corporations, and they don't want to upset them either. So there's going to be a long debate here to see where is the middle ground, I would say. But when the middle ground is got and when a treaty is signed, it goes back to the capitals then, and the capitals eventually have to ratify that treaty. And sometimes that process, even in Ireland, can take a long, long, long time because it has to go through a legal process. And that's the way it works. But as I said, once it has gone through all of those processes and once it is ratified by a country, well, then they are bound by the rules of that treaty.
So only the countries that have ratified it are bound to it.
Some countries that mightn't have ratified it would have a kind of a moral obligation to observe, we'll say, the treaty in the form of guidelines, if you like. And all countries will come under pressure. Once the treaty starts to be ratified, all countries will come under pressure to ratify it. But a country that hasn't isn't a completely legally bound by the treaty.
It seems, and is this normal in these treaties and these kinds of negotiations, that the European Union is negotiating?
Basically, well, the Commission normally speaks for the European community at certain meetings, but the Commission doesn't have an overall competence in this particular area. They have in other areas such as trade. So individual member states can speak as they wish. But a lot of people would like to see a coordinated position of the European community, that they would all agree on an approach, because it is a huge bloc and a very powerful bloc, but that is obviously not the situation yet. When we met our ambassador yesterday, he clearly indicated that Ireland was going to have a certain amount of leadership, but he also indicated that they would be depending on an EU position. I suppose no country wants to go put their head above the parapet and go out on their own, so they will be reporting back to the EU, and the EU is very important for Ireland. But it was nice to hear that the Irish position, that Ireland would take a lead, as we've done on human rights in the past and in other areas at the UN.
That was Bertie O'Hanover in conversation with Gertrude Cotter. They were in Geneva, part of the Trokra delegation that travelled to participate in the United Nations sessions on a binding treaty on business and human rights. Before that, you heard from Siobhan Curran and Blanca Blanco in extracts from a Trokra video. The video is called Defend the Defenders and can be viewed in full on trokra.org. You are listening to The Global Hub on Community Radio Y'all. We'll be back after the break with more from Geneva. You're welcome back to The Global Hub. We're reporting from Geneva, where presenter Gertrude Cotter joined a Trokra delegation to the United Nations. A binding treaty on business and human rights was being discussed. Whilst there, she talked with Siobhan Curran, Trokra's policy and advocacy advisor.
Well, I suppose the reason we want this treaty and the reason we see the importance of a new instrument in human rights law is because there is a governance gap. So at the core of all of this is access to remedy. People have to be able to get justice when their rights have been violated, but also prevention. We don't want to always be looking at the justice for affected communities. We need to prevent these things happening. So these are two core tenets of a treaty. And of course, within all of this, we recognise that different groups are impacted differently by the activities of corporations. Indigenous communities are at the front lines of this struggle, which is very interesting, I think, because we can link it with the climate struggle, and Indigenous defenders are defending our environment. You know, we need them, and yet what's happening is they're paying with their lives, literally, for defending our environment, because it's all we benefit from a safe environment. Indigenous communities and also women are another group who are differentially affected by corporate activities. So what I mean by that is, when in communities, when corporations either grab land, or when there's forced evictions, when land is polluted, when there's severe trauma to communities and they're displaced and dislocated, it is very often women who bear the brunt of this, because women are often the carers. They're the ones left to heal. They're the ones left to care for children. They're the ones left to care for families in poverty, and they bear the brunt of this. They're also more likely to be forced from their land, because women often have less legal rights to their land and less security of tenure. So very often women are at the core and at the front of these human rights struggles. Women human rights defenders also experience very specific gendered attacks. Very often when companies and states are trying to undermine human rights defenders, they will engage in smear campaigns against women, often attacking their character, using there have been reports of sexual images of women being disseminated in order to attack their character. There have been reports of threats against their children and their family as a way to get to them. Women experience differentiated and additional harms and attacks and threats by virtue of the fact that they're a woman and a woman human rights defender. And this is what a treaty needs to address. So it needs to understand that the struggle of Indigenous communities, of women, are not separate struggles. They're actually the core. They need to be brought to the centre. We address these, and then we see the benefits for the wider community also.
Tony Devlin from Dublin.
From Dublin, and you're here with Trokra as well. What are your reflections over the last 4 days?
Well, I think what's been growing over the days as they passed is the sense that really everything is connected.
Yeah.
Whether it be the actions on the street, where we're trying to raise public awareness of business and human rights issues, to the very formal environment of the room 20 here in the UN building, where the actual working group sessions are going on. The language is formal, and yet those two things are connected. One influences the other. And then very powerfully, the side events where people are talking about their own experiences, and particularly the experiences of Indigenous people who are victims of human rights abuses perpetrated by transnational corporations, and indeed some local companies as well, in areas like mining and hydroelectric and so on. And that kind of continuum of engagement from the formal to the informal, and the different levels at which it happens, the legislative level and then the level of people's lived experience, that's really coming home to me, that this is all connected.
On Monday morning, the 14th of October 2019, we made our way to the United Nations building, where Kate Gilmore, Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights, opened the fifth session of the open-ended Intergovernmental Working Group on Transnational Corporations.
Excellencies, distinguished representatives, dear colleagues, it is my great honour on your behalf to hereby declare open the fifth session of the open-ended Intergovernmental Working Group on Transnational Corporations and Other Business Enterprises with respect to human rights. Excellencies, helping reconcile the interests of people with the opportunities of business is a task for which the human rights system is well suited and must be better positioned. A future human rights treaty can help ensure effective prevention, protection and remedy for those subjected to business-related human rights abuses, just as it can help open up more sustainable, more equitable and inclusive development, development that addresses the interests of those who otherwise are left behind. But without a focus on human rights, people are never at the center. And if people are not at the center, their concerns always fall by the wayside. The human rights impacts of economic activity that disregards people are not neutral. They're not benign, and they're not distributed equally. Business-related human rights abuses impact different groups of people, different groups of rights holders differently, and some disproportionately.
Once we have all the facilitated the working groups, we're going to vote with our feet, which means that you choose one of the working groups you're most interested in. If you end up as a facilitator being totally on your own, you can just dissolve your working group and go to another one. So, the topics of the working group. The first working group will talk about the scope. The second working group will talk about rights of victims, Article 4 mainly. The third working group will talk about prevention, Article 5 mainly. It's also listed there. Fourth working group is talking about liability, Article 6 mainly. Fifth working group, jurisdiction, Article 7 mainly. The sixth working group is enforcement mechanisms. The seventh working group is going to talk about supply chain.
You've just heard some audio from the working groups at the United Nations. One of the sessions discussing the binding treaty on business and human rights was addressed by a speaker from the Transnational Institute. In this extract from that speech, you will hear a reference to ISDS. That stands for Investor State Dispute Settlement. It's a legal process whereby corporations can sue nation states for alleged discriminatory practices.
The Transnational Institute was set up in 1973, immediately after the coup in Chile, by both Chilean refugees and other international counterparts, if you like, other international analysts and political actors who already saw that the coup in Chile was not simply again about the deposition of a democratically elected leader, but opening the door for a new level and a new stage of capitalism, actually. A capitalism that would be driven by the interests of corporations. Allende himself had said that in December at his famous address to the UN General Assembly, where his analysis that time, because they were dealing with copper, the copper corporations from the US and telecommunications, and his diagnosis at that time was that we're beginning to deal with a new kind of power that's not simply an economic power, but it's also a political power, and as it turned out, also is very well able to exercise military power, as we see. Of course, one of the characteristics was this kind of understanding that we were getting into a new way of economic model, but also that what would be very significant in the development and confrontation with this would be people's movements, people's struggles for self-determination, and what we today call social movements, like you have described, no? Both in Honduras and in Palestine. So actually, I mean, TNI is doing a range of work in terms of the economic model. Besides the corporate power work, we're also doing quite sort of systematic work on trade and investment. And I think we've managed to make the story about ISDS and how bad it is for people. I mean, the campaign that came into the Broken Chair Square this morning is really about that. You know, that we need in trade to to link very much the corporate question. But as well as that, we are doing work that's in a way supporting the work of social movements in alternatives. So for example, we have a program on public alternatives, which is very much the fruit of the struggles against privatization. So especially on water, there's been an amazing global struggle actually on water. Also in Palestine, it's a major question. So maybe to come to the current question of the working on transnationals and developing a strategy for a binding treaty, one of the strategic partners that we've worked with as TNI is what's called the Permanent People's Tribunal, which is based, some of you might know, on the Charter of Algiers, which has to do with the rights of peoples. And this gives a lot of space for the articulation of especially economic rights, the rights also of peoples for self-determination. And we had 6 years of work from 2006 to 2010 with anti-corporation struggles throughout Latin America, with three sessions of the tribunal. And that really, you know, just opened the whole doorway to multiple areas of destructive exploitation and investment by corporations, no? In every facet of life, from water and food to high finance and so on.
Access to natural resources, especially land, is essential for poor communities. Therefore, human rights activists are forced to take action in defense of their territory.
For indigenous people in Guatemala, land is hugely important. It's not only where they live and where they get their food from, but it's also, there's a spiritual link and it goes back to their ancestors. When they're evicted and resettled in another land, you can imagine that it's difficult because they lose that link. And according to Mayan cosmovision, we're all one entity, so human beings together with nature. And there are four key elements to that cosmovision or spirituality, which is air, water, land, and fire. And so they treat those elements or nature in general very respectful. Like they consider them their ancestors. So that's, you've probably heard that they talk about Mother Earth or Grandmother River. So yeah, there is that important element. And particularly with land, figuratively, they are born from the land. The land gives them their food. The land protects the water sources. So when they are evicted and when there is a scorched earth policy, which means burning, you know, like everything, like their crops, their houses, their land, that's like a rape. And that's a violation of their rights as individuals and as a community.
So, Jim Cremin from Cork. Two key things. The first key thing is when we met the ambassador, the Irish ambassador to Geneva, right, we're at a historic moment now where, again, we need to take the lead as an Irish people. And so we would really love, I hope that the Irish government, through the ambassador, will take on the messages that we gave him the other day. There's time for us now to lead, to take on, to help other people, take on the massive economic empires of big business that's out there, and hopefully that people will know, strike for their economic freedoms. The second thing that really struck me is that to meet them here and, you know, personally, and these people are under threat, and I've just come from a meeting now where Carolina in Brazil and all the effect of the big business and dams absolutely scourging and violating and scarring their country and leaving their people dead and then she putting on that fight, and you're just wondering then that the risk that she is undertaking, it's easy for me to speak here, but the risk that she undertakes in her daily life, and you just wonder if you meet these people again. I think there was this company called Vale that had in Brazil that had gone in and you know completely devastated the place, and the effect that that had on those communities. And I think what affected me most is that Carolina, who I'd met for the first time the other night, and we were at dinner together as a large group, and to sit down next to her and share a drink and have smiling and having a bit of fun, and then to see her today and the way has affected her. You know, it's just horrendous to see that. This is a person, like, I don't know, you know, we see troker boxes and we see the images and the whole things, but to have the person, the living person right in front of you, has a huge effect. And I think, like, I know you know what your radio programme and me doing talks, I think all we can do is get the message out there to the Irish people, and hopefully they will respond.
Well, we saw when Trochra attended various events like the Bloom event in Dublin and the Food Festival in Galway and the Ploughing Championship, we saw the amount of people that were influenced by the story of land rights, particularly in Guatemala, and the cruel way that people are thrown off their lands. And people were willing to sign a petition, and we were able to give over 8,000 signatures to the ambassador yesterday, and that will have its own effect. What I would say to people is it's easy to get involved in any of those campaigns, and there are so many campaigns out there about Palestine, about various issues in the third world, about various world issues, but so many people stay clear of these type of things for some reason. But my recommendation would be get involved, go to the meetings, see what can be done. There's always something that can be done. It's always positive, and there's a feel-good factor about it. You'll feel better when you have to.
That's Bertie O'Hanover, and before that you heard from Jim Cremin, both of them volunteers with Trochra who made the journey to Geneva. Earlier you heard Blanca Blanco speaking on the spiritual links that Indigenous people feel with their land. She also features in this extract from Trochra's video, Defending the Defenders.
Life in Guatemala cannot be divorced from the legacy of colonialism and conflict. It is a country divided by racial and economic inequality. At its heart, a clear line still exists between the indigenous communities and the descendants of European settlers who colonized the region, beginning in the 16th century. Since then, indigenous communities have been marginalized in Guatemala, while the descendants of the settlers have kept a firm grip on the country's political and economic power. This inequality was exacerbated during the country's brutal armed conflict, which raged from the 1960s to 1990s. The war was fought between US-backed military dictatorships and various leftist groups. More than 200,000 people were killed in the course of the conflict. According to the United Nations, over 80% of those were indigenous Mayan. During the war, many indigenous people were also dispossessed of their ancestral lands by military officials, private companies, and wealthy landlords. In 2013, Efrain Rios Montt, the military dictator who oversaw the bloodiest period of the war, was tried for genocide relating to the murder of thousands of Mayans.
The reasoning behind the conflict was inequality and access to resources, basically land, and that hasn't been resolved. In fact, it's probably even more problematic. So, and indigenous people are still considered as second-class citizens. The highest rates of malnourishment or illiteracy rates are among indigenous populations. So there's a particular situation now in Guatemala where most of the areas that were affected during the conflict and where scorched earth policy happened are being concessioned to either national companies or multinational companies, or sometimes national companies with multinational funding. We're talking about mining companies, hydroelectric power stations, even monocrops like African palm or sugarcane. And, well, first of all, there is a violation of the right of indigenous people to be consulted, and to give their prior informed consent to these projects. Then they are the concessions are sometimes given in a very dubious way. So that's where corruption comes into place. And this is because there's a link that it never stopped after the conflict between politicians, military and businessmen. To be a human rights defender in Guatemala is to put your life at danger. just for speaking up, protecting the environment, or asking to be informed about a business project that is going to be imposed in your community, you could be put in prison, or you could even lose your life. Like this year, almost 24 human rights offenders have been killed. So as to put it in the words of a human rights offender that we visited recently, he said, we feel like David and Goliath on the Bible, yeah? We're fighting against a giant, but, you know, if there's one thing that human rights offenders have in their favor, is perseverance and their courage.
You can see the full video defending the defenders on Trokra's website, trokra.org. A couple of weeks after returning from Geneva, Gertrude talked with Siobhan Curran to reflect on the experience.
How would you assess the week?
I think we've had time to reflect and think about the content that was discussed during the week. And I think on reflection, we can see that there were very concrete proposals suggested by experts, by member states and civil society. And so we hope that this will feed into a new draft, which will be published by July 2020. We do hope to see a new and improved draft. I think we can say that the engagement by member states was strong. There were almost 90 member states in attendance at the session. Gender certainly was improved in the draft, and there were more focused discussions on gender throughout the week, so that was very positive. I think there were still issues of contention around the scope of the treaty that that will be an ongoing discussion between member states. And I mean, really, I suppose where we are now is looking to the future, where the EU will be more active in the discussions. And I think if we wanted two key things to happen for next year, that would be that the EU would have a negotiation mandate. So for the next negotiation session, they can really seriously intervene and participate in the discussion. And the second thing we'd like to see is Ireland having a fully developed position also on the treaty, so that we could hear Ireland participating and intervening in the discussion, and also bringing its own human rights experience and weight to such an important UN human rights treaty.
What was the highlight of the trip to Geneva?
For me, the highlight was definitely travelling to Geneva with so many Trokra activists. We really felt the people power and the influence we could have. We had a very good meeting with the Irish ambassador who we had really great discussions with him on the treaty and with the deputy perm rep. So I think, bringing the action of supporters from the street in Ireland to the negotiations in Geneva were a highlight for me.
What can people do to help you to get that message, those messages across?
I think mainly keep the pressure on. So the most important thing we can do is all to use our voice to talk to our politicians, and to ensure that they're very clear that we don't want to be complicit or part of a system that favours the corporations over the human rights of people, and that human rights need to come before profit. And I think if that message can be communicated consistently to our leaders, then we will see a very different engagement in the session in Geneva in 2020.
We're coming close to the end of our show. We're going to hear now from Bertie, Jim and Tony as they talked with Gertrude Cotter at the end of the week in Geneva.
We have engagement here. In the beginning, there was none. The resolution was passed at the Human Rights Commission. We have engagement now. Even if it takes 10 years, and I'd be hopeful that it mightn't, this will make a huge difference. And maybe for 50 years afterwards, lots and lots of Indigenous people who have such a rich lifestyle will gain so much from what the work we are doing here today.
Lacoon of day. And Garamila Mahagut.
I think the bottom line in a practical sense is that big business will only be affected if it hits their pockets. And I think the way that children, and particularly teenagers, are mobilising and making themselves aware, I think they will hit the pockets of these big businesses. They just simply won't buy their products or be in any way associated with them. And on the political front, I think, no, not all politicians, but an awful lot of politicians are interested in getting their seats back again and interested in votes. And these are the kids who will be voting in the future. So I think the key thing is to get the message out there. I was also very hopeful here at the United Nations, listening to the legal people and the various avenues that big business can be brought to book and that this treaty, hopefully, I know it's a slow process, but I think it is actually going in the correct direction. And maybe in a few years' time, we will have a legal binding treaty.
One thing that stays with me is that I think all of us volunteers who were lucky enough to be part of this activism trip to Geneva to participate and to experience all the stuff that's going on here is that we now feel, and I think we'll be talking about this on the way home because we're going home by train and boat, that's a long journey back home, we'll be talking about this, the obligation that we now feel to not just let this pass away as an interesting personal experience, but to use it in the way that I think Trokara hope, which is to mobilise more individuals and communities at home and to become amplifiers and multipliers for the important lessons that we've learned and for the important issues that are really in focus here. In that context, you know, Trokara spend a lot of time thanking their volunteers and they treat their volunteers very well, but I think there's a huge debt of gratitude owed by the volunteers to Trokara for really opening up all of these opportunities to us, all of this wonderful awareness raising, which really just connects us much more closely with the fundamentally important things in life, and you know, we are grateful to them for that.
You have been listening to The Global Hub, the monthly community radio YAL programme, which deals with social justice and human rights issues at home and abroad. From my point of view, this has been a steep learning curve. It has been interesting to see how such treaties as the UN Business and Human Rights Treaty are negotiated. I've been very impressed too by the work of civil society organisations working together for human rights and at the incredible work of Trokara. I would like to thank all the contributors to this programme and especially the Trokara staff and volunteers who participated. This is Gertrude Cotter and thank you for listening.